even as a dude who doesn't have kids, I just love that they communicate really kind of deep, radical truths in ways that are super simple. As a pastor, it's always my job to take difficult concepts and make them simple. So why not lean on the shoulders of people like Max Lucado, right, to do that in part for me? We're going to be doing this all month. We're calling this series Storytime Advent, and we're going to pick a different children's story each week to kind of just put some things into play so that we can have discussions about those elements. But we also think there's something beautiful about connecting the family around Christmas, right? And so the kids are leaving, and they're going to go have a lesson on the same story. Probably will not be the same as what I'm saying because they're tiny, small brains, tiny people. So they're going to make it like a children's level story. But so the hope for this is that you have stuff to talk about over the Advent. What happened in church today? There should be some consistency between the children and the adults. So we're starting with this story that you just heard. And if you were to summarize the story, the one of the critical elements is that there are these four children who think they have to work to impress the king, partly because they've been told they have to work to impress the king. That's the world that they've grown up in, that the king is only going to let you come into his house if you're impressive, if you've earned it, if you've done something to warrant the invitation in. And kings don't just roll into town and take people without talent, right? I'm a guy who, I spent a lot of time thinking about this week. I'm not an impressive man. very short, moderately intelligent, only sort of handsome, right? My whole life, I've not necessarily wanted to impress others, but I work really hard to kind of impress myself. I want to know more than everybody, and I want to be better at everything than everybody else. I don't need you to acknowledge that. I just need to know from my own spirit that I'm better at stuff than you are, right? It's a sign of what we call spiritual immaturity. But there have been a couple times in my life where I've really worked hard to do something impressive, and I want to tell at least one of those stories. It's from when I was a sophomore in high school, and I was playing football on the football team. And I wasn't yet a starter on offense, and it was a scrimmage, right? So it doesn't really matter if you win or lose. I was a running back, and I broke through the line, and there was me, the end zone, and this one guy. This is actual real footage. I'm the guy on the left. I've thinned down a little bit. But I looked at this guy, and he was like Ezra's size. He was this teeny little, like, terrified boy. And he was right in the middle of the field, and I had some jets back in the day. I could have easily just run by him and, like, waved. But I thought, no, I want to earn that starting spot. So I decided to, like, I turned and went right at him thinking, I'm going to put my shoulder right in his chest, I'm going to bury him, and I'm just going to keep going, and it's going to be awesome. I turned, I put my shoulder right in his chest and buried him and fell over his face mask. My foot got caught, and you heard everybody in the stands say, oh, you just heard all these, like, this gasp of disappointment, and then these very isolated jeers. Why did he run into him? Well, because I was trying to be impressive. There was another time when I was in fourth or fifth grade, we were playing dodgeball. And I used to be the guy who's like, well, I'm not going to, you know, you're not supposed to throw the ball at people's heads. If you can't get your head out of the way, that's on you, right? Like, your eyes are literally on your head. It should be the easiest thing not to get hit in the head. So I didn't really play by it. I would just chuck it at people. I wouldn't try to hit them in the face, but if it did, you know, collateral damage. Mrs. Kennar sent me to the wall because I had hit like three kids in the face in a row. And so I had to stand by the wall. But I just started yelling and trying to draw the attention back to myself, right, and gather a crowd, and of course, I did. And the way the wall worked is if you were in trouble, you had to be touching the wall at all times. So I would, you know, put my foot on it and get out as far as I could, and telling jokes and taunting the people who were playing dodgeball. And I started kind of dancing because all the kids had kind of gathered, and it was my show, right? To this day, I don't dance because of what happens next. I was doing one of these little, like, butt wiggles, and split my pants, like, heartily split my pants. And one of the girls who, whatever it means to have a crush in fourth grade is, was standing there, and she just burst into laughter, and I was like, oh, shoot. The times that I try to be impressive, it goes painfully bad, is the moral of the story. And no matter how impressive it would have been to wiggle my butt without ripping my pants, there's not a great upside to this, right? But we live our lives with this intention of, or this assumption that we have to do so impressively. We have to be better at things than other people. We have to earn our place in the kingdom. So I want to just tell a story from the Old Testament. It's long, but it's a good one. It comes from 1 Kings. Elijah is a prophet, and for the sake of this argument, he's the last prophet of Israel. The king of Israel has really deviated from Yahweh, and he's now worshiping all these other gods. And Elijah talks to one of the sort of temple prophets, Obadiah, and says, hey, tell your king Ahab that I've got something to say to him. So it starts in 1 Kings 18, 16. So Obadiah went to meet Ahab and told him, and Ahab went to meet Elijah. When he saw Elijah, he said to him, is that you, you troubler of Israel? I have not made trouble for Israel, Elijah replied, but you and your father's family have. You have abandoned the Lord's commands and have followed the Baals. Now summon the people from all over Israel to meet me on Mount Carmel and bring the 450 prophets of Baal and the 400 prophets of Asherah who eat at Jezebel's table. So Ahab sent word throughout the land and assembled the prophets on Mount Carmel. Elijah went before the people and said, how long will you waver between two opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him. But if Baal is God, follow him. The people said nothing. Then Elijah said to them, I am the only one of the Lord's prophets left, but Baal has 450. Get two bulls for us. Let the Baal's prophets choose one for themselves and let them cut it into pieces and put it on the wood, but not yet set fire to it. And I will prepare the other bull and put it on the wood and not yet set fire to it. Then you call on the name of your God, and I will call on the name of my God. The God who answers by fire, he is God. Right? So this is kind of a, okay, we're going to have it out. This is a rubber meets the road. You talk to your gods, I'll talk to my gods. Whoever shows up is, like, actually exists, right? Is a real God. Then all the people said, what you said is good. They all agreed. The Baalim prophets were like, yeah, that's great. Elijah said to the prophets of Baal, Elijah said to the prophets of Baal, choose one of the bulls and prepare it first, since there are so many of you. Call on the name of your God, but don't light the fire. So they took the bull given to them and prepared it. Then they called on the name of Baal from morning till noon. Baal, answer us, they shouted. But there was no response. No one answered. They danced around the altar that they had made. Imagine singing and banging on drums and all kinds of ceremony, right? At noon, Elijah, I love a guy who taunts. A prophet who gets credited for taunting people. He's my boy. At noon, Elijah began to taunt them. Shout louder, he said. Surely he's a god. Perhaps he's deep in thought, or he's busy, or he's traveling. The ESV says perhaps he has to relieve himself. Maybe he is sleeping and he must be awakened. So they shouted louder and they slashed themselves with swords and spears, as was their custom, until their blood flowed. Midday passed, and they continued their frantic prophesying until the time for the evening sacrifice, but there was no response. No one answered. No one paid attention. This is ceremony. This is impressive. This is a full-on event. These 450 prophets are worked up into a lather to try to evoke their God to do something. Then Elijah said to all the people, come here. And they came to him, and he repaired the altar of the Lord, which had been torn down. Elijah took 12 stones, one for each of the tribes that descended from Jacob, to whom the word of the Lord had come, saying, your name shall be Israel. With the stones he built an altar in the name of the Lord. and he dug a trench around it large enough to hold 2 seas, which is about 24 pounds of seed. He arranged the wood, cut the bowl into pieces, and laid it on the wood. Then he said to them, fill four large jars with water and pour it on the offering and on the wood. Right? This is him really like stacking the deck against himself. I don't know if you know it or not, but wet wood doesn't burn as readily. Right? Then he says, do it again. And then he says, do it a third time. And they did. And the water ran down around the altar and even filled the trench. At the time of the sacrifice, the prophet Elijah stepped forward and prayed, Lord, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, let it be known today that you are God in Israel, that I am your servant and have done all these things at your command. Answer me, Lord, answer me, so these people will know that you, Lord, are God and that you are turning their hearts back again. Then the fire of the Lord fell and burned up the sacrifice, the wood, the stones, the soil, and also licked up all the water in the trench. When the people saw this, they fell prostrate and cried, the Lord, he is God. The Lord, he is God. So here you have these 450 people working, trying to be impressive, trying to get their gods to notice them. And then you have Eli just like sitting on the back like, you guys done now? Is it my turn? Wanna? Okay. And then there's fire. Elijah's not impressive in this story. He doesn't, at the end of this, they don't say, Elijah, Elijah, he's the real prophet. No, no, no. All the glory goes to God. He doesn't do anything to draw attention to himself. He just is present. So how do you get God's attention? Obviously a trick question. You need to realize and maybe repeat to yourself, you always have God's attention. The king rolls into town in the story seeking those people who are present, seeking the people who need him. You don't have to do anything to get God's attention. You don't have to impress him or your spouse or your children or your boss or your pastor or your neighbor. You just have his attention. That's what this whole season is about. This whole idea of Advent is thousands of years ago, we, the people gathered in this room, had the attention of God, and he sent Christ to eventually become a sacrifice because of you, because you had his attention and his heart. There's another story that we often use for stories or for sermons like this. It comes from Luke. It's the story of Martha and Mary. And it goes like this. As Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister named Mary who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him and asked, Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do all the work by myself? Would you tell her to help me? Martha, Martha, the Lord said, you are worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed, or indeed only one, and Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her. When we lived in Ohio, my wife and I would host both sides of the family for Thanksgiving, and oftentimes I would be in there slaving away, cutting and dicing and sautéing, and she would come in and say, do you need help? And I would, in a very grumpy way, be like, no, I'm fine. When in real life, the whole time I was just like begging for her to ask if I want help, right? So like 6 months later, finally I was like, hey, you know, when you ask and I'm a jerk about it, like that's on me, but I do need your help. And she's like, okay, let me help. But here's the issue, like I'm also hosting, right? Like we have a house full of people. We don't want them to sit in a room without us there, right? I'm like, no, that's totally... That's right. But there was a part of me that's like, I'm putting in all this work. I'm putting in all this time. I'm dicing. And she's just in the other room. And I found myself sort of resenting that. And then, of course, my wife is wiser than I am. So when I sort of talk to her about it, she's like, that's fine. But aren't you missing the point? I'm like, yes. Yes, I am. We invite people into our house to spend time with them, not to dote. Now, we've invited you all to our house next Friday. And I'll probably spend too much time making sure that everything looks pretty. This is a real confession, right? Like I don't like when things aren't right. But what this, the point of this Luke text is it's not about the preparation. It's here's Martha slaving away and resenting her sister Mary for just sitting at the feet of the Lord and being filled up, just being present with the Lord. Isn't this what we've been talking about in Sabbath for this last 4 months, 4 weeks? So the question then becomes, how do you let God get your attention? Because it's never the case that you don't have his, right? He is always attentive to you. He knows the number of hairs on your head, and he provides, and he... But how often are we not attentive to him? How often are we, Martha, busying ourselves, especially this time of year, with other things, with distractions? When all we need to do is sit at his feet and receive. Here. Psalm 46:10 is the key verse, but I like to give a little more. It says, starting in verse 8, come and see what the Lord has done, the desolations he has brought on the earth. He makes wars cease to the ends of the earth, and he breaks the bow and shatters the spear. He burns the shields with fire. He says, be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. That idea of being still and knowing, isn't that what Mary is doing? Isn't that what Elijah is doing? He's not trying to impress anybody. He knows. The other 450 prophets are going to tire themselves out. They're praying to something that doesn't exist. And he has faith in his God, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He's still. He knows. He has faith. He's not busying himself with distractions. He's not worried about if the deviled eggs have the same number of capers on each one before people come over, because how embarrassing if one had four. That'd be terrifying. He doesn't care. Mary doesn't care. Elijah doesn't care. And so as we enter this holiday season, the question is, will you recognize the king if he rolls into town? Does he have to have a crown for us to know that it's him? Does he have to be dressed in regal? Or can we sit on our porch with a cup of coffee and have an interaction with the king? Can we listen to worship music or a sermon or silence on our way to work and have an interaction with the king? Can the people that you run into that annoy you, because it's getting to that time of year, folks, where if you go shopping, I don't know about you, you're going to get annoyed with somebody. Is that the king? Does he have to wear a crown? At the end of the story, the little girl asks, did you find the people you were looking for? And he says, I found them, but they were too busy for me. Are we going to be too busy for the king? He goes on to say who those people were, the woodcarver and the musician and the artist. And then the little girl says, but you don't look like a king. He says, I try not to. People act strangely around me. They ask for favors, try to impress me, and complain. And the girl says, isn't that what kings are for? And the man says, certainly, but there are times I just want to be with my people. To talk, to hear about their day, to laugh with them, to cry with them. I just want to be their father, he says. As we enter a time of Advent where the promise is that the Messiah is coming, there's expectation, there's anticipation for the coming Christ, the one that will eventually be hung on a cross and resurrected, the one who's come for the sole purpose of connecting us with our Father so that we can just sit and be with our Papa. The challenge this Advent, and really all Advents, is can we be still enough to know who God is? Can we create enough time and space in our lives to laugh with him, to cry with him, to not just come with our petitions of what we want, to not just levy complaints about fill in the blank, but to just, when's the last time you asked Jesus, how's your day? Hey, God, how's your day? What if we were a people that could just sit at the feet of Jesus, stand in the background while we let other people sacrifice to their foolish altars? What if we could be the people that just sit with the King? My prayer is that we would not be people who miss the King when he comes to our town, but that our eyes would be tuned to see him, that our awareness would allow us to be filled with his Spirit because we've been attentive and appropriately paced this season. And we'll have the worship team come up and I'll pray us out. Heavenly Father, we say the verse, be still and know that I'm God, all the time. And Lord, I think there are two parts. We often are just still, and sometimes we know that you are God. But Lord, I pray that you would make those two ideas united in our minds and our hearts and our spirits and our bodies. That we wouldn't be people who find other ways to try to impress you to get your attention, Lord, but that we would rest in the fact that we already have your attention. In fact, we can't shake your attention. So, Lord, let us live in that, in the knowledge that we are already being doted on and celebrated by the living God. And allow us to rest in the peace that comes from knowing all we have to do is then be aware of you. Father, Advent is here. This is a time of hope and peace and joy and love and faithfulness. So, Father, as we've been saying throughout this Sabbath series even, I pray that you would not allow it to be robbed from us. That you would break through the white noise of buying and prepping and traveling, and that we would catch glimpses of the King even in his plain clothes, and that we would be able to rest with him this season. And we pray this in the name of the Son, the coming Christ. Amen.